Welcome to a highly questionable around the horn situation. No Danny, no Poppy. We got Katie Nolan, Sarah Spain, and Mina Kimes in this crossover episode. Sarah, what do you like on the show today?
Well, the Bears kicker doinked again, and there's nobody to make me watch it over and over.
Oh, I will. I will.
Oh, good. Let's do this.
Hey, Mina, high five.
No. No!
Bigger story from last night, Steven Strasburg's dominance or the ump's incompetence?
Well, the bigger story that actually affected the outcome of the game is Steven Strasburg. He went 8 innings on the road in a World Series elimination game. Almost went 9, actually. He's become the first pitcher, unless he somehow takes an L in Game 7, which won't happen, the first pitcher in Major League postseason to have 5 wins and 0 losses. And even on the other side, the Justin Verlander thing, giving up another couple of home runs, super interesting and also affected the outcome of the game. But in the 7th inning, this whole thing got taken over by a first base umpire who called Trey Turner out, and it was called interference, and after a confusing, lengthy review was upheld, took over the entire game, Katie. I'm not sure if you actually know what happened, but it seems like if it wasn't for Anthony Rendon, we would have had a huge controversy in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you said affecting the outcome of the game. The call, obviously, the Nationals ended up winning, but that call affected the win probability of Washington by 14.2%, which is an insane amount for an ump to have control over a game. We love a controversy. So I think that the thing that we're going to talk about is this, especially because it involved a manager getting kicked out of a World Series game that he ended up winning, which I think is the first time that's ever happened, set to the tune of Take Me Out to the Ball Game, which is a thing I did not know that I needed to see until I saw it. And it was also crazy because we got to hear baseball players overthinking something that is so simple and automatic as how to run to first base, which is just always fascinating for us non-athletes to hear them have to break down such a simple part of the game. So I think in history we will remember, especially if the Nationals win the World Series, Strasburg's incredible Game 6 performance. But today, it's this.
Yeah, I agree with Katie. Today it's going to be this because it's more fun to argue against other people, and there ain't anybody arguing that Strasburg didn't have a good night, right? There's nothing really to argue against there, so we'd rather talk about whether that rule is dumb in the first place and whether it was called correctly despite being dumb, whether or not it needs to be changed, or whether we're being prisoners of the moment because it didn't even affect the outcome of this game. In the end, the bigger story is clearly Strasburg, not because he almost threw a complete game in the World Series and had all those statistics that you mentioned before, but also because this was, as Jeff Passan called it, the denouement of a story that had so many ups and downs in D.C. This guy whose debut was so thrilling, and then it felt like he might be lost to injury and never live up to expectations. And this could be the capper of bringing a title to this baseball team in D.C. as they're returned as the rightful baseball team of record for our nation's capital. And this is the guy that's going to do it for him with a performance like that. That is a way better story than arguing whether he took a couple steps out of line on the way to first base.
It's the better story, but it's not the bigger one, right? Rob Manfred should send Anthony Rendon like a gift basket to thank him. Because imagine if the Nationals had lost. Every gas bag in sports media would have walked into work today with a flamethrower. Stephen A. would have done a 10-minute monologue with like a string orchestra in black and white for some reason if that had actually happened. I saw people defending the call as being technically correct. Yes. Technically, it's technically illegal to wrestle a bear in the state of Louisiana, but that doesn't mean it should be enforced. The context is what matters here, and they are so lucky the implementation didn't affect the game.
I just want to point out as an animal advocate that I think it should be enforced if you try to wrestle a bear in any state, because those animals should be beloved and protected and not wrestled. Mina.
You're not biased, true lady from Chicago. Exactly.
Was Juan Soto's response to Alex Bregman awesome or petty?
Another issue that had very little to do with the outcome of the game. We had Alex Bregman early on in the game, who'd been hot, walking to first base with his bat, watching his home run. Tried to give it to his first base coach. Here he is. He tried to give it to his first base coach, Don Kelly. He dropped it. And, of course, a few innings later in the 5th, it was Juan Soto who homered 2nd in that inning and walked. Here he is, walking to first base with his bat again. Now, after the game, there was an apology from Bregman, which seems a little bit over the top, but he was apologetic. And Juan Soto essentially said, hey, I thought it was pretty cool. Now, Sarah, I think this is all pretty cool. Shouldn't even be this big of a topic conversation.
I mean, I completely agree. The unwritten rules of baseball are my least favorite thing in all of sports, and that's really saying something. So when it's, like, big deal for him to carry the bat to first, that's dumb in the first place. And then when it gets copied, and his response is perfect, which is, I just thought it was pretty cool, right? Not stirring anything up, just sort of playing around with it, having fun with it. That's what I want to see. And to be fair, the amount that we now allow pitchers to throw 90-mile-per-hour hard balls at people's faces when they stunt, maybe they should be carrying the bat around the bases just in case a brawl breaks right out, because they're going to need protection, a weapon, and they're never allowed one.
All I want is for someone to explain to me what is actually offensive about carrying a bat, not just because it's always been this way or the rules. Like, just lay it out and explain it. You can't, because it's impossible. MLB has this marketing message right now: let the kids play. The problem is the culture of baseball is so ingrained that the kids, in this case Alex Bregman, are apologizing for playing and having fun. He apologized with more passion and speed than his team apologized last week for doing something actually wrong.
Oh, God, what a great point. Also, as somebody who has, like, been on my cell phone and then searched through my house for my cell phone and not realized that I've had, like, sometimes you just forget you're holding on to the bat. I really don't think it's that big of a deal. But also, we've mentioned that Bregman apologized. He apologized three times. The managers both said that they hated it. And there were reports that he apologized to players on the field. This whole respecting the game thing, that is disrespectful to the game. I don't want an athlete that's walking around being like, I'm so sorry. For what? What did you do? I don't even understand. So stop.
To Mina's point, what are they afraid he's going to do with that bat, even if he crosses first base with it? Is he just going to clip everybody else on his way around the bases? It's ridiculous.
It's a Tonya Harding moment in the waiting, I guess.
Did the Bears make a mistake by not trading for Andy Dalton?
The fact that my football team is in a position to think that things might be better if Andy Dalton was our quarterback, a man whose nickname I always say wrong, and you can figure out for yourself, and so can your dogs, how I say it wrong, and that somehow that would be a better situation is so depressing. That being said, it would have cost them about $8 million in cap space, probably a day three draft pick, and they've got $18 million cap space. It wouldn't have cost too much, but they don't have very many draft picks to spare. They're without a first rounder again because of the deals that they've made. And when they don't have a key mix on that defense, they've got an offensive line that's anemic, a run game that fumbles too much and can't put together enough yards, and the rest of their offense that even if you put Andy Dalton in, probably wouldn't bet that great. Plus, a coach who didn't even give a thought to running a play with a minute left and first down and a timeout to get a kick that would be easier than a 41-yarder for a kicker who is prone to mistakes. I don't see how adding anyone is going to save this season. Pick them up in free agency if you need to, but this season's over.
It's more fun when Sarah puts up a fight. Like, when she's this sad, it's actually just kind of depressing.
Defeated.
I think they should have done it, honestly. Right now, the Bears are taking the same approach the Jaguars did for a few years, which is they have an elite defense and a bad quarterback. You never go full Bortles, and that's what's happening. I mean, Mitch Trubisky's not even the best quarterback on this roster, honestly. Statistically, Chase Daniel was better in every way. QBR twice as good as Trubisky. I do think they should have done something.
I think we should not overlook two important details. Number one, Andy Dalton got benched on his birthday.
Yeah,
that sucks. That's not a good birthday present. And number two, I think it made sense just in, like, color scheme. Like, right. There are only a couple
good
teams
point
that he could go play for, and, like, the Bears have a great orange in their uniform. I think all of that made sense. He absolutely should have gone to – this is my sports analysis.
Nailed it.
It's absolutely crazy if you think about it. Look, they'd be nuking Mitchell Trubisky's career right now for Andy Dalton, for a chance that Andy Dalton's going to carry you to the Super Bowl that you had hoped was happening. If they still have any faith whatsoever that Mitchell Trubisky can become a competent quarterback in this league, then you don't make this move. But if you're ready to move on, then yes, $8 million and a quick shot at Andy Dalton, who, you know, is probably better than average if you give him all the right surroundings and everything else. So, look, it's one of those situations where if you want Trubisky, if you're continuing to have him in your future, absolutely don't make this trade. But if you're kicking him to the curb after this as your starter, why not salvage something out of this year? That defense isn't going to be great every single year. Hey, Sarah, did you notice that Cody Parkey was a 2-for-2 on field goals and 3-for-3 on extra points the other day?
No, I missed that, Izzy. How are the Dolphins doing, though?
Oh, woo!
At least the Dolphins are trying to be bad, Sarah.
Fair. Fair point.
Coming up next on my Soul Stevie show.
I feel
Sarah,
like we
I
all
do...
just worked through a lot of stuff there, emotionally.
No, because it triggered me, because I feel like the actual analogy would be like if your boyfriend told you he wanted to break up.
Does playing to 45 now seem like a cinch for Tom Brady?
Yeah, so Tom Brady went on Jim Gray's radio show and said what he's always said, which is that 45 is the age he wants to be in the NFL until... Again, nothing new. It's something he's always said, although now we're getting closer, so it's time to discuss if it's actually going to happen. I think, yeah, obviously it does. I think the thing that people overlook, I think he could play till, you know, 50 probably, but the hard part that it's going to be for Tom is not going to be about physical ability or his ability to continue to play football. I think the problem is going to be the mental toll it would take on you to be an athlete who has always been great, who's been looked at as the best, who's been called the GOAT, to then have to accept that you will regress a little bit in your later years. And there's the conversation about legacy, and if you want to go out on top, I think that naturally it would be insane to expect a 45-year-old quarterback to be the best quarterback in the league. And then you would have to, as Tom Brady, accept that you're going to take a step back in terms of rankings. And I know that sounds silly, but athletes that have always been the best, that's a very difficult thing. We've seen that with athletes before at the later end of their careers, having to adapt to where they are in terms of greatness. So I think that will be the interesting thing to see. He's still awesome. I think he'll play till he's 62. Oh,
Katie, I don't even think it's that big of a deal to consider him playing to 45, 46, 47. I'm old enough to remember when you couldn't play tennis professionally past the age of 30 and be any good, right? So obviously technology and taking care of yourself can help. The interesting part to me is, so we talked about Adam Schefter saying, hey, he's selling his house. His contract is up after this year. There's more than likely he will play for another team than actually retire. And to me, this is where this question leads to me. It's why would he part ways? Is it the Patriots that just don't want him anymore? They see him declining. Does he just want to scratch an itch and play for another organization, which is dangerous, separating yourself purposely from Bill Belichick? I don't know what the answers are. I'm just going to go to Mina here and say, Mina, is there a reason football-wise that the Patriots would want to let go of him? Because I don't see it.
That is the more interesting story. It would happen if his play declined. We know how ruthless Belichick is. Unfortunately, for people who do not root for the New England Patriots, his play is not significantly declined. Yeah, just a little bit. I am so tired of talking about Tom Brady playing forever. Like, Katie's right. He's going to play until he's 90, or they're going to do something strange. Like, he's going to have a head in a jar, Futurama style, controlling a mech suit. And everyone's going to be like, that's really weird. And the Patriots fans are going to be like, you hate us because you ain't us. And they'll be right.
Great points, all of them, Mina. I think the point about Bill Belichick and moving on is probably the smartest one. I get why Katie and Izzy don't want to bail out on Tom Brady. Every time we try to do that, we talk about his demise. He just comes back and wins again. So we shouldn't presume that he isn't able to play to 45. But we are starting to see signs of aging. And we are wondering whether Belichick at some point will want to move on to whoever's next and prove that he can be a great coach with someone else. If Brady has to go somewhere else to play and test that theory out at a later age when he's not at his peak and be outside of the Bill Belichick realm, that's a huge risk. So this relying on staying with the Patriots until he's 47 or 62, as Katie said, and maintaining his skill set so that he feels comfortable still being out there, not tarnishing his legacy in a way that, you know, doesn't feel right to him anymore. Those are a lot of things to think about. Now, Katie's worried about his mentality. I will tell you this much. He sounds very centered. He said to Jim Gray, the future and the past are in the mind. I am in the now.
Did the Jets do Jamal Adams dirty?
So yesterday, after a very quiet trade deadline, there were many rumors that Jamal Adams was asking out of New York, that the Jets were shopping around. Jamal Adams took to Twitter and said, crazy, the Jets went behind my back and shot me even after I asked them not to. I actually don't think he's in the right here, right? Because if the Jets had actually not accepted any calls or even listened to offers for Jamal Adams, we'd be making fun of them for being a bad team and saying, LOL, Jets. Where he is right is there were also rumors that he wanted out. Usually when that's the case, it means the team is laying the groundwork for a trade. And I can see how that would be frustrating for him if it's not true.
Yeah, a lot of aspects of this story sound really petty. Like you have the GM saying, arguing semantics that we didn't shop him, but we didn't turn down calls, which is like, what's really the difference? There's a little one, but not a big one. Then you have the fact that that Jamal Adams took the Jets out of his Instagram bio, which people were taking to mean he wanted to be somewhere else. Or I just think it's like, you know, they sometimes you date a guy, but you don't want everybody to know, so you don't have to put it on the internet. The Jets are absolutely that guy. Doesn't mean that you're not in the relationship. You're just, you know, considering maybe other options. But what I think is where they actually did do him dirty is in the fact that they made it very clear publicly through all of these stories that there is a price for him, and there's a price for Le'Veon Bell. They are willing to actually just get rid of them for the right price. And then they didn't get rid of any of them. Mm-hmm. So now you have these guys you need to work really hard for your team. The two guys, Le'Veon Bell and Jamal Adams, who are working, due to, like reports have said, are working harder than anybody else on the team. Now they got to go out there and keep doing that for a team that's made it clear they're not committed to them and they don't really have a plan long term. So that's not good, and I would say did dirty.
I don't think you did them dirty. I think it's the business, which is unfortunate, but they should know that. It's sort of like a relationship, right? If you go to your boyfriend and you say, I really love you and I want to be together, and then he says, I'm sorry, I want to break up, is that him going behind your back or doing you dirty, or is that that side of the equation saying, I don't want you anymore? And if Jamal Adams had gone to the Jets and said, I want to stay here, I love being here, and they had still traded him, that's how the business works. They didn't want him on the team anymore. Now that can hurt your feelings. You can admit it's a tough business. You can say that at any moment you're at the whim of the people in charge. But I don't think that that's any different than any other time someone gets traded in the league, unless they expressly said to him, we are not trading you. There is no way you're off this team. And there's no indication that they did.
Look, I don't have a relationship analogy here. I'll just say it seems kind of childish. And it is, as Sarah said, just part of the business. Just because somebody says, hey, I want to stay here long term, does not mean the team has to allow you to stay here long term. It does not mean that everything's going swimmingly with the New York Jets and they should keep everything the same. And here's another thing. There were supposedly rumors out there that Adams wanted to go to the Cowboys. He's from Texas. If I'm the Jets and I'm taking calls from the Cowboys, I'm thinking in my head, maybe I'm doing this dude a favor, leaving from this terrible franchise right now to his hometown, Dallas Cowboys.
I feel Sarah, like we all just work through a lot of stuff there, emotionally.
No, because it triggered me, because I feel like the actual analogy would be like if your boyfriend told you he wanted to break up, and then you were like, I'd like to stay, and then he didn't break up with you. That's what happened. That's why it's crazy. I've been in that relationship. It lasted for 2 more years after that.
You want to talk about it some more, or are we good?
No, later, off camera.
Okay. Time to play the game that's feeling very outnumbered. Do you question?
You give us topics and events, we question them. Gotta dye your hair brown.
Do you question if Hakeem Olajuwon is still an elite athlete?
One of the fun parts about the World Series is picking who throws out the first pitch. Well, in Game 6 in Houston, we had 56-year-old Hakeem Olajuwon throwing to Clyde Drexler. Mind you, Hakeem Olajuwon, one of the best basketball players ever. Known for his footwork. Oh, not for his arm, though. He looks like he threw out his back, too.
If Poppy was here, he'd be pulling up that Mike Wilbon video, or he would say, at least he's better than Ben Simmons.
I feel like it's never beneficial to do a first pitch, to throw it out. It's like, if it goes well and you're already an elite athlete, then great. If it goes poorly, we do this on this show.
Yeah, I feel like, oddly enough, somehow the mound is the ultimate level playing field, where no matter who you are, no matter what you bring to the table, you all suck. Like, it is very rare for anyone not to suck, no matter what their athletic expertise is, once they get on that mound.
Katie, were you speaking from experience there?
No, I've never thrown a first...
Yay! Oh, look.
What is that?
Better than Hakeem Olajuwon.
I mean, and I will be putting that on my resume from here on out. I insisted on throwing from the mound because I was like, I'm not a loser. I'm not throwing from in front of it. I want to be on that mound. And then I just forgot how to throw. I pushed the ball.
You kind of pushed it forward there.
I didn't even roll. If you watch my wrist, I don't move it at all. It just goes like... I played softball. I was upset.
Shot pudding. Time to play the game that's very confident Katie's about to get the head nod wrong. See? Oh, no.
No!
It was me!
What's up?
You give us stuff to watch on TV and we'll tell you if we're intrigued. God.
Tonight at 8 p.m., Game 7 Nationals and Astros.
You might as well get your C's up right now. We've had some Game 5s. We've had Game 5 action in the playoffs, but World Series Game 7, there's nothing like it. We got Scherzer, we got Greinke. Here are those two guys talking about Game 7.
Well, I mean, it's Game 7. Let's go.
Yeah, going to be a big game.
They can hardly contain themselves. Katie, are you intrigued?
I mean, after a sell like that, how could you possibly say no? It's tough. I don't know who I'm rooting for. But I feel like the umps. I think the umps are going to take this one.
Wow.
Baseball's got to love those sound bites. Sarah, do you love those sound bites? Are you intrigued?
Game 7. Who isn't intrigued? I mean, the Scherzer story alone of coming back from the neck spasms and the neck locking up where he couldn't even dress himself 2 days ago to now saying there's no pain, I gotta go. I can't wait to see what he's got against Greinke, a guy whose name brings a lot but tends to be fatigued down the stretches of seasons. What's he gonna bring? The last Game 7 in the World Series, what was that like a couple of years ago? Oh yeah, I remember the Cubs won the World Series.
Mina, you should shock us all and say no real quick. Tell us you're going to watch some Seahawks footage instead. Are you intrigued?
Of course. I love how Sarah just gave all that great history and analysis, but everyone was probably distracted by her janky sign. Can you lift that?
Yeah, what is that?
We all have homemade. The saddest sign.
Oh, the show is captured by the signs today.
That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for watching. Mina, plug something quick.
Everybody subscribe to ESPN Daily, my new podcast.
Sarah?
That's what she said with Sarah Spain. Subscribe, rate, review.
Katie?
Always Late is on Thursday nights at 12:30 a.m. on ESPN2. Nailed it.
Hey, Izzy, you want to plug your new hair?
Oh.
I think that's an Amin El Hassan joke.
Come on home, Amin.
Spicy.